had not even thought of it until this moment. How could I have forgotten? He thought, standing aghast in the middle of the darkening street. Still, why should he have remembered? He felt no interest at all in his wages, since all he did was carry them home to Gebu. If I could have them once, he thought bitterly. Never mind, he could not have them. Things were as they were, and right now they were very bad indeed. He could not stand here forever while night came on, yet he could scarcely conceive of going home to face Gebu empty-handed. What will I tell him? Ranefer thought desperately, even while his feet took him hurrying homeward again. I cannot tell him I forgot. He will not believe it, and then he will beat me for lying. If he does not believe it, he will beat me anyway, from fury. Aye, and he will want to know where I have been so long, what I have been doing and why I have been doing it. I cannot think of answers to all those questions. I will have to tell him nothing, or the truth. When he reached the street of the Crooked Dog, he had not yet decided between these alternatives. Either was unthinkable. He stopped trying to decide, and in sort of an exhausted calm trotted the rest of the way down the gloom-filled street and into the familiar barren courtyard. It was empty. Maybe there will be a miracle, Ranefer thought as he leaned, panting, against the gate. Maybe Gebu did not wait this once. Maybe he forgot the coppers, too, and went out somewhere and will stay a long, long time until tomorrow, and will never know that I did not have them, or ask me questions, or find out that I went to Zau's. The hinge of the door at the top of the stairs creaked loudly. The door banged back against the wall, and Gebu came violently down the stairs. There was to be no miracle that night. Chapter 9. The following morning, Ranefer crept to the shop sore in every muscle, with the old, familiar strips of fire across his shoulders. As he had expected, Gebu had not believed the simple truth that he had forgotten to collect his wages. The added truth which might have convinced him, the story of the visit to Zau, Ranefer had stubbornly withheld. He had paid a high price for his silence, but even a beating was preferable to turning his heart and hopes inside out for Gebu's scornful inspection, seeing them withered with ridicule and blown away like dust before his eyes. He had little enough hope left in him as it was after the conversation with Zau. Gebu came into the shop in the middle of the morning, snarled ill-naturedly at Pai, and stalked about inspecting the work in a manner that caused every man to bend closer to his chisel or drill and all conversation to cease. Ranefer, scrubbing away with sandstone at a chunk of quartzite, dared not glance around when Gebu paused beside a half-finished stone coffin only a few feet away from him. His very skin shrank in an effort to put more distance between himself and his half-brother, but he could not help being aware of the voices of Gebu and Pai, gradually raised in argument until they could be heard even over the clatter of the shop. "You, Ranefer!" Pai roared suddenly. Ranefer dropped his sandstone and looked around fearfully. "That scroll on the lower shelf, the plan of the judge's tomb. Fetch it, hurry!" Ranefer hurried, as much as the soreness of his legs allowed, to the storeroom at the far end of the shop. There were 5 scrolls on the lower shelf. With hands made clumsy by haste, he unrolled one after another. From being ordered often to bring some particular scroll to Pai, he had become superficially familiar with these drawings, which at first had looked like meaningless bird tracks to him. All tomb plans were similar in design, but he could now tell one from another by recognizing some detail. The judge's was the one with the narrowest entrance passage and only 2 rooms beside the burial chamber. It was the last he picked up. He snatched it and returned to Pai, who took it without a glance. Ranefer was glad to be ignored, gladder still to be safely back at work when a moment later Gebu's voice rose in an angry bellow directed at Pai. "You see, imbecile? The coffin is too wide, I told you. Perhaps you would care to chip away the sides of this passage on the day of the burial.
It is easy enough to alter the coffin, Pai answered sulkily.
Then alter it, and hereafter heed what I say, or I will find a foreman who will.
Gebu stalked past Ranefer with nothing more than a glare, and Pai followed, thrusting the scroll at Ranefer as he went by. As Ranefer scrambled down from his stone to take the scroll back, he saw Pai at the pay box, counting out to Gebu the coppers from yesterday, and those for today as well.
He means to take no chances that I will forget tonight, Ranefer thought as he started for the storeroom. Cursed one! Why does he care for my coppers, except to make sure I do not get them? If only I could keep them, I could hide them away and someday buy a donkey. But he does not even need them, especially these days when he swaggers about in fine headcloths and new-made sandals. He has two pairs of sandals now, one with buckles, like a judge's. Aye, and he eats fish often, and salted waterfowl. I can smell them in the storeroom at home, and he reeks always of wine or barley beer.
Ranefer's thoughts paused in surprise. He stood in the storeroom, the scroll forgotten in his hand, and considered these things. Until now, he had paid them no attention. Certainly, Gebu seemed to be increasingly well-to-do. The sandals, the headcloths of fine linen, several of them, yes, and for some time Gebu had reeked of expensive ointments as well as barley beer.
My coppers cannot have made all that difference, Ranefer reflected. Perhaps the fan-bearer had paid a great sum for that red granite coffin with the alabaster lid. Or else Pharaoh must have rewarded the stonecutters handsomely, indeed, for the work on the temple. How else could the cursed one have grown rich so suddenly unless he was stealing again?
The instant the idea occurred to Ranefer, he was sure it was the answer. A remark of Gebu's sprang into his mind.
Him and his paltry wineskins, there are far bigger birds in the air than Wreck the goldsmith.
Obscure at the time they were spoken, the words were now as clear to Ranefer as the shape of the shelves in front of him. Gebu had found some other goldsmith to rob, and no doubt a better, safer way to do it. No wonder he had needed the Babylonian no longer and scarcely taken notice of his dismissal. The new scheme must have been already in operation. Ranefer thrust the scroll onto the shelf and hurried back to his work, filled again with the hope that he had thought almost quenched yesterday. This time, if he found Gebu out, he would make sure of his proof. He would find witnesses. Better, this time he had friends who might help, not only Hecate, but the Ancient. He could scarcely wait until midday. When it came at last, he ran at full speed to the thicket, disregarding his soreness and passers-by alike. He ran so fast that he was the first to arrive in the little green room and had to wait. Fuming with impatience and groaning a little in spite of himself at the flames he had stirred to life across his shoulders. Presently, however, Hecate and the Ancient arrived together, speaking in low tones as they came along the shaded little path, with the soft-eyed donkey plodding behind them. Ranefer suspected Hecate had been telling the old man about what had happened at Zauz, no doubt feeling he must explain beforehand Ranefer's probable gloom. They both looked surprised when Ranefer jumped to his feet and pulled them through the reeds into the little clearing, urging them to sit down quickly and listen.
Gebu has been beating you again, Hecate said, with a sharp glance at his friend's shoulders. Aye, because I forgot my coppers yesterday, but I'm glad I did, because it made me think. Now listen to me.
The story poured out. Gebu's sandals, his headcloths, his ointments, his peculiar remark to Wenamun months before. Hecate and the Ancient mechanically performed the usual ritual of dividing what food there was, but their attention was riveted on Ranefer. Hecate grew so excited that by the time Ranefer paused for breath, his snub-nosed face was transformed and he could scarcely sit still.
You are right. I know you're right. Isn't that so, Ancient? How else could a man become so rich in a few months' time, unless Pharaoh had singled him out for favor? And that one is as likely to be singled out by Pharaoh as I am to lose my appetite overnight. Here, Ron-Effer, take one of these loaves and some grapes. Now, what shall we do about it?
I don't know, Ron-Effer answered, realizing for the first time that he had no idea of how to proceed.
He glanced questioningly at the Ancient, who was old and must therefore know a great deal about everything, but he found the old man looking both thoughtful and dubious.
The doubt was contagious. Ron-Effer turned away quickly and said in a louder tone than he intended,
"But we can do something, that much is certain. We can find out more. I will watch Gebu, see where he goes."
He was talking at random, but Hecate pounced on the words.
"Aye, that's it. Follow him as often as you can. See who he talks to. Try to hear what they say. His companions, we must discover his companions. That skulking Wenamun is surely part of the scheme. Perhaps I could watch him. He lives but a step from the apprentice's quarters. We will become spies. Who else is Gebu's friend, or does he have any others?
There is a river captain. Of course, I do not know if he has anything to do with this.
Aha! A river captain!
Hecate was in transports.
Naturally, there would be a river captain. Do you see?
They must smuggle the gold out of the city in some way, perhaps to Abydos. They would not dare barter raw gold here for headcloths or sandals.
Someone would soon ask how they came by it. Do you agree, Ancient?
Aye, that is doubtless the way they would do it, the old man said slowly, so slowly that Ron-Effer stole another anxious glance at him.
Hecate was already talking again.
The Ancient can spy on the river captain. What could be easier? Here he is near the river all day. He goes each evening to the sailmakers by the docks. An excellent idea. Ast! What a bright fellow I am, as the stone said when it looked into the copper mirror.
What's this river captain's name?
Setma.
Setma,
the Ancient echoed. Do you know him, Ancient?
Aye, I know him. I do not like his sort.
Wenamun is worse, Ron-Effer said quickly.
And Gebu is worst of all, Hecate added.
Once more, Ron-Effer searched the old man's face.
Now do you believe all this? He ventured.
I never said I did not believe you, young one.
You have not said much of anything at all,
Ron-Effer said uncertainly.
Nay, I have not.
The Ancient sighed and picked up Hecate's knife to slice a lotus root.
I fear for you two hotheads, mixing yourselves up with dangerous business. What if these men catch you spying on them? It would go hard with you.
But we will be very careful, Hecate exclaimed. I mean to be a spy worthy of any noble's hire, silent and invisible.
He glanced challengingly at the Ancient.
Of course, old one, if you are afraid.
The Ancient's face relaxed into its usual good-natured creases. A slow grin turned into his high-pitched cackle.
May the gods love you, boy. Why should I be afraid? No one takes any notice of an old one-eyed nobody like me. I could tread on a man's heels for weeks before he'd suspect me of being dangerous.
It is the same with us, Hecate argued eagerly. Who takes notice of boys, especially ragamuffins?
You are no ragamuffin, Hecate, Ron-Effer said with an admiring glance at his friend's new shanty, which was of fine woven linen. His own was the flimsiest cotton and tender in every fiber from long wear.
I am no Lord High Fanbearer either, retorted Hecate. Though, of course, we both have our natural beauty, as the hippopotamus said to the rat.
Hecate snatched up a bunch of grapes and held them across his throat like a necklace, meanwhile assuming an expression of such conceited hauteur that both Ron-Effer and the Ancient burst out laughing. He flung the grapes down and went on.
In any case, I am paid no more attention than 1,000 other boys in Thebes, and neither are you, Ron-Effer.
We need no magic to make us invisible, so long as we do not actually stumble over anyone's feet. For my part, I am ready to be Wenamun's shadow day and night, except when I am at the Gold House, of course. And even there... He stopped, and his face lighted with a new idea.
What is it? Ron-Effer prodded him.
Why, I have just realized something. I can do much more to help you. You know yourself, Ron-Effer, when gold is missing from any gold house in the city, the others learn of it. The smiths warn each other.
Aye, that is true. Rex sent Sata to his brother's shop and others down the street.
Exactly. Very well, then. I will keep my ears open. I will grow ears like that donkey yonder. If word comes of thievery in anyone's shop, I will know which one.
Now that is a good plan, the ancient said emphatically. That will accomplish something, possibly.
Hecate, the irrepressible, glared at him an instant and then growled deep in his throat like some very small, fierce dog.
You do not think my spying plan of any value, then? He demanded.
Aye, of inestimable value, the old man cackled, shaking his head until his thread-like hair quavered.
Spy all you like, young one. You are probably right. No one will notice your antics. You might even find out something.
And you will watch the river, Captain?
Aye, I'll watch him, though it will not be a pleasant sight, I assure you.
Then you will watch Gebu, Hecate said to Ron-Effer. I will do my best, but I think he will notice if I try to follow him.
Aye, that's a problem in your case. It's true.
No matter, I will try it anyway, Ron-Effer said. All he can do is beat me and send me home.
He hoped it was true. He did not really know what Gebu would do if he realized Ron-Effer was prying into his affairs, and he preferred not to think about it. Something of the sort must have passed through Hecate's mind, for he said uneasily,
Take great care, though. Well, it is all arranged, then. We will meet here when we can, as always, and tell each other what we have learned. Agreed?
Agreed, Ron-Effer said solemnly.
Agreed,
the ancient echoed, not solemnly at all. He was still chuckling now and then under his breath, and Ron-Effer suspected that he looked on the whole plan as a child's game. As they left the little green room to separate to their work, however, he beckoned Ron-Effer down the path in the direction of the shrunken river, and the familiar twinkle in his one eye had vanished.
Come with me a moment, young one.
He left the path presently and pressed through the trackless growth of rushes and brushes, which he seemed to know as well as Ron-Effer knew the street of the Crooked Dog. At a place where the undergrowth ended and the papyrus began, the water's edge in winter, now a stretch of mud, he stopped beside a spreading patch of some low green plant. Stooping, he gathered a handful of the leaves and crushed them with a little mud in the palm of one hand. Then he turned Ron-Effer about and very gently smeared the mixture on his shoulders, where the fires still burned. Instantly, they cooled. The relief was so great that tears sprang to Ron-Effer's eyes. He looked wonderingly at the old man, whose gentle touch seemed as great a magic as his salve. The ancient smiled.
I have not much wisdom, but I know a few things, he remarked. Now I want a promise from you about this spying, young one. Will you give it?
Aye.
Do not follow this Gebu of yours after full night has fallen. Men can come and go in the darkness, and often no harm comes of it. But you are not yet a man, and kefts fly away with children, even half-grown boys like you. Do not risk it. It would be better to spend your life as a stonecutter.
That is true, ancient. I will not risk it.
Well, then, be off with you.
He is right. Ron-Effer reflected as he hurried back to the shop. I will tell Hecate, too. Hecate fears nothing. He might not even remember about the kefts. A moment later, though, he realized that Hecate would do no dashing about after Wenamun at night, even if he should want to. The doors of the apprentice's quarters were locked and sealed at nightfall, and there were no exceptions to the rule.
They would have few hours in the day for following and watching. Still, much could be done between the end of work and the coming of full dark, which was later now than in the winter seasons.
And think what it might mean if they could discover something.
Ranefer was determined to begin that very evening. He went directly home at the day's end, with none of his usual reluctant dawdling. Gebu was there. Ranefer could hear him moving about in his room at the top of the stairs, but he did not come down.
Why should he? Thought Ranefer resentfully. He already has my coppers for today.
He found supper in the storeroom, drank from the water jar, and settled himself under the acacia tree, prepared to watch every motion Gebu made if he should come into sight. He did not come into sight for what seemed an interminable length of time. Ranefer's eyelids were drooping and his head nodded when he heard the upper door suddenly open and footsteps come down the stairs. Every sense alert, he watched Gebu walk across the courtyard, open the gate, and go out. As soon as the gate closed, Ranefer scrambled to his feet, wincing as the abrupt movement reminded him of his soreness, and ran to the corner of the wall where cracks in the mud bricks and the straggling vine provided a precarious ladder for climbing to the top. Peering over anxiously into the street, he saw Gebu walking eastward in the direction of the river. Ranefer waited until he was a considerable distance down the street, then jumped from his perch, ran to the gate, and let himself out cautiously. Staying close to the walls of houses and courtyards, he followed the distant, bulky figure around a corner and into the thoroughfare, then along the thoroughfare at the beginning of the docks. There, Gebu turned into one of the several doorways set into a solid line of palm-thatched buildings, and disappeared from sight. Ranefer gazed blankly at the doorway, over which hung a leather wineskin. He was both relieved and disappointed. He knew what this place was. It was Mutra's wine shop. There was nothing very mysterious about Gebu's going there. He went there often. Still, he might be meeting someone. This might be the place where the thieving plots were laid.
It's certain I cannot follow him inside, Ranefer thought. I can watch the door, though. That is what Hecate would do. I will see who goes in to meet him.
Across the street, on the stone docks, was a row of overturned fishing boats draped with nets spread out to dry. Ranefer selected one of the small punts made of bundles of papyrus reeds bound together, and crawled under it. Its sharp-pointed prow lifted at an angle from the stone floor of the docks, and though its shelter concealed him, he could still watch the doorway easily. It was another long wait. Men came and went along the thoroughfare. Several times one went into the wine shop and after an interval came out. Ranefer knew none of them. Wenamun did not come, nor did Setma, nor did anyone connected with any gold house, as far as he knew. The sunset light faded, the street grew dusky, and still Gebu did not appear. A fat-bellied man waddled out of the shop with a lighted torch, thrust it into a bracket beside the door, and waddled back inside. Ranefer began to peer about uneasily, searching the deepening gloom among the boats for possible kefts. At last, when he was thoroughly stiff from his cramped position and almost ready to retreat before the coming of night, the door of the wine shop opened. Gebu came out and turned immediately toward home.
I must get ahead of him, Ranefer thought. I must get there first, so he will not know I have been gone. But how will I do it? What if he is not going home? How can I tell unless I follow right behind him?
In a panic, he crawled out from under the punt and raced silently down the street after Gebu, who walked stolidly ahead. When he turned at the end of the thoroughfare, Ranefer was sure he could be going nowhere but back to the street of the Crooked Dog. Dodging into an alley, he ran as fast as he could until he was certain he was ahead of Gebu. Then he crossed back in the direction of home by another street and emerged into the street of the Crooked Dog to see Gebu still some distance away in the gloom. Ronefer flew across the street and into the courtyard, closing the gate as silently as possible behind him. An instant later, he was safe on his mat under the acacia tree, breathless and panting, but lying in an attitude of sleep. In a few moments, Gebu came in the gate, banged it carelessly with no regard for noise, and climbed the stair to his room. Ronefer relaxed and gradually regained his breath. He felt considerably flattened by the evening's events. If this was spying, it was anything but an exhilarating occupation. What good was there in crouching under a punt all evening, watching a wine shop door? Moreover, it was no less dangerous for being dull. "Still, I must keep on with it," he told himself as he settled more comfortably on his mat. This was only the first evening. Perhaps he will go someplace else tomorrow, or meet someone, or do something suspicious. Perhaps Wenamun and Setma have met tonight, and Heket will have much to tell tomorrow. He drifted off to sleep, anticipating. Chapter 10. The following midday, Ronefer was the first to reach the little green room in the thicket. Heket appeared only a moment later. "What news?" Ronefer asked breathlessly. "A great deal." Heket flung himself down and began to divide his food as he talked. "I have discovered an excellent place to watch Wenamun's house. He lives near his shop, you know, in the Street of the Masons, which is only one street away from the Street of the Goldsmiths. Well, there is an alley behind the apprentices' quarters."
"Greetings to you, fellow spies. Seen any hangings lately?"
The ancient's seamed face appeared through the fringe of reeds, and his one eye rolled from Ronefer to Heket with an expression of exaggerated stealth.
"Greeting, ancient. Come in. Listen. Heket has much to tell us. Go on, Heket."
"Well, there is an alley behind the apprentice's quarters which runs directly behind Wenamun's house, too. I discovered this last evening as I was prowling about the place. And in this alley, just a short distance from Wenamun's rear wall, is a straggly old dom palm tree. And from the branches of this tree, I can see directly over Wenamun's wall and into his courtyard. He has a wife with a voice like a hyena." The ancient cackled, and Ronefer leaned eagerly closer.
"Well, go on. What did you see?"
"I saw Wenamun come home from his work. I saw his wife give him barley beer and set his food before him, nagging all the while. He had salted waterfowl and bread and onions for his meal. His wife ate what was left when he had finished."
"But did he go out after the meal?"
"Nay, he sat in the courtyard."
"Oh, then did someone come to see him?"
"Nay," Heket confessed. "He did not do anything at all last evening. But I could see him perfectly. He was in my sight all the time. No doubt this evening something will happen. Then I will watch it all from my tree. It is an excellent thing I have discovered such a good place."
Aye, it is,"
Ronefer agreed. But he could not summon as much enthusiasm as Heket seemed to expect. Boiled down, Heket's story was the same as his own. Nothing whatever had happened.
"And you, ancient?" Heket said. "Did you find Setma last evening?"
"Aye, I found him. He was at the sailmaker's when my lotus and I brought our papyrus. I kept my eye on him a while. He went to a wine shop and bought his food and ate it. Then he walked across the mud to his vessel and went aboard. You can be sure he took no trip to Abydos, or anywhere else. No vessel can move now until Blessed Osiris rises and the Nile comes back to life. Possibly he entertained a few kefts or devils in his cabin later, but I did not stay to see. My lotus and I went home to our little house and rested our old bones."
Again, nothing.
"Well," Ronefer asked himself angrily, "what do you expect after only one evening?"
"Patience, stupid one. These things take time. Something will happen this evening, or perhaps tomorrow." Nothing did, however. A week passed during which neither Gebu nor Wenamun did anything more suspicious then walk to some wine shop after the evening meal, or gamble at Hounds and Jackals with some crony in the privacy of their own courtyards. Setma's movements were even less interesting whenever the ancient took time to spy on him. Ronefer found the whole thing very discouraging, but Hecate's interest never flagged. It seemed rather to increase. "They are lying low," he told Ronefer one midday. "They are purposely avoiding one another. Wait and see. There is some deep reason behind it, and we'll find out what it is soon. Keep watch. Something is sure to happen any day now." At last something did, several days after the river began to rise. Gebu went out one evening, with Ronefer doggedly behind him, and struck straight across the city of the dead instead of turning toward Mutra's wine shop as usual. Ronefer grew more and more excited as he followed Gebu's twistings and turnings, more and more cautious, too, as he noticed that Gebu often looked behind him in a not quite convincingly casual manner. Surely something was afoot this time. Ronefer was certain of it when he realized they were nearing the street of the Masons, and almost choked with excitement when he saw Gebu turn in at Wenamun's gate. "I must find the tree," he thought. "Hecate will be there, and we can watch together. Perhaps we can even hear them plotting." There was no way to pass from the street of the Masons into the alley behind it, except to pass through one of the houses, or else go far around by the next cross street. After considerable fuming hesitation as to whether he should leave his post, Ronefer decided to risk it. He ran for the far corner as hard as he could run, worrying all the way over the possibility that Gebu and Wenamun might walk out the front gate and be gone before he could find them. A glance back from the corner showed the long street still empty. He dashed on, around the corner and down the cross street, hurried into the alley, and was triumphantly sprinting for the tree when just beyond it a door in the wall opened without warning and Gebu and Wenamun stepped out. Ronefer stopped so abruptly that a little cloud of dust rose from his skidding feet and he almost lost his balance. They had not looked in his direction yet, but in no time at all they would. Frantically, he groped at the wall beside him, clutched a latch, and pulled. In an instant, he was inside some stranger's courtyard. In another instant, a dog was rushing toward him, giving tongue as he came. Ronefer turned in a panic to the wall again, seized a branch of some creeper, and with the aid of a toehold in the roughness of the plaster, pulled himself up a few inches above the dog's snapping jaws. They still looked frighteningly close. He took a better grip on the vine and loosed one foot to search for a wider crack. The moment he moved, one vine began to pull away from the wall. He froze. One more moment and he would fall straight on top of the dog, or else Gebu would open the gate and find him. In that minute, some dark object sailed over his head and the dog's snarling changed into an offended yelp. Another object followed. This time Ronefer heard the clunk as it hit, and the dog howled and made off across the courtyard. "Ronefer," came an urgent whisper from somewhere above him. "Come out, quick, they're gone." Ronefer dropped to the ground, staggering with relief and treacherously numbed toes, flung himself out the gate and closed it. As he leaned against it, panting, Hecate dropped from the branches of the dom palm and ran toward him.
"Hurry, they've gone that way. We can still follow and keep them in sight. What did you do to that dog?"
Ronefer gasped as Hecate pulled him relentlessly down the alley.
"I threw dom nuts at him. I could see everything that happened. I knew they were coming out that back gate, and I thought they'd catch you for sure. Come, this way." "There they are, ahead there. Lucky for you, I could see into that courtyard where the dog was, as well as I could see into Wenamun's." "Where were you going so fast?"
"I was coming to join you."
They had slowed down now, and Ronefer's breath was beginning to return.
"I followed Gebu to the street of the Masons, saw him go in."
"Well, it's turned out well enough this time, as the ostrich said when he swallowed the melon.
But there had better not be a next. That was too close for my peace of mind.
Mine too. Still, I'm glad I'm not hiding beside the front gate still, waiting for them to come out. Look, they're turning toward the shop.
Gebu's shop?
Aye, it's just yonder. We'd best get out of sight a minute.
They ceased whispering and flattened themselves into a shadow. A little way down the dusk-filled street, they could see Gebu and Wenamun pause at the door of the stone-cutting shop and, after a moment, go inside.
Maybe Setma will come now, Hecate whispered. Maybe this is their meeting place.
Setma did not come, however. After a while, a torch flared inside the shop, and they could see it moving in a leisurely way here and there. It stayed some time in the scroll room, then flickered toward the place where Ronefer knew the judge's coffin stood.
"It is only some matter of business," Ronefer said, disappointed. "The judge's entrance passage is too narrow for his coffin, or the other way around. I heard Gebu speak of it once. That's all they're talking about now. This has nothing to do with gold stealing."
Hecate sighed. After lingering a few moments longer, he said rather lamely, "Well, we have done all we can today, as one locust said to another. Perhaps tomorrow." The two boys separated and went their ways. Again, nothing had happened. The Nile rose freely in the next few weeks, and, in spite of the relentless heat, the gloom of the god's death was gone from Egypt, and the joy of his rebirth was in every man's speech and walk and brightened eye. Navigation began again on the river, and the pace of life quickened. Except that he shared the deep relief of his fellow Egyptians at the river's rising, Ranefer's life did not change. For a time, he and Hecate doggedly continued their spying and reporting to each other, and the ancient joined in when he could. The old man could not come often to the little green room nowadays, because he was cutting his papyrus in a distant part of the marsh, and the sailmakers demanded bigger loads each day in this season of boat building and refitting. Occasionally, though, his seamed old face would appear through the curtain of reeds, and with his cheerful cackle and his "seen any hangings lately?" he would come in and share his food with them. He kept a faithful, if intermittent, eye on Setma, too. The riverman had begun regular trips up and down the Nile again. The ancient always made them laugh with his mock-solemn reports, but he never found out anything. Possibly, Ranefer reflected, because there was nothing to find out. He himself was fast losing all faith in the spying. Never had Gebu behaved so innocently. Never had a man seemed so devoted to his own courtyard and nagging wife as Wenamun. Occasionally, the two met at Mutra's or at the stone-cutting shop to study the scrolls, and presumably to confer for long, dull periods over building plans. Neither went anywhere near a gold house or appeared to be acquainted with so much as a goldsmith's apprentice. Gebu was not stealing anything, that was all. He was doing nothing whatever but live a stonecutter's routine life. No doubt Pharaoh had paid more than usual for the temple work. Whatever the explanation, the continuing signs of wealth were not due to stolen gold. So Ranefer reasoned and could find no fault in the reasoning, however much he wanted to, until one night when he was wakened again by the squeak of hinges. He lay still, listening to the stealthy pad of Gebu's feet on the stair and across the courtyard, feeling the usual tingling thrill down his spine as the gate latched softly and he knew Gebu was out in the dark street, moving among the nameless evils of the night on one of his unknown errands. What kind of errands could they be? That he would brave even demons and kefts to accomplish them? What could conceivably be that important, especially to Gebu? As far as Ranefer had ever been able to discover, nothing was important to Gebu, excepting gold. Excepting gold! Ranefer sat straight up on his mat and stared into the dark. Gold, of course. Gebu was after gold.
Why in the name of Amun had he not realized it before? This was when the thief was doing his thieving. Those squeaky hinges were the answer to everything. They explained the inexplicable. They wiped out the contradiction between Gebu's innocent daytime behavior and his mysteriously increasing wealth. It was no wonder, Runefer thought disgustedly, that all his spying and Hecate's and the ancients had gained them nothing. Everything was happening while they slept. What exactly was happening, though? Who was Gebu robbing? Could he be climbing over courtyard walls, creeping into rich men's houses, prying into their storerooms and treasure chests in the dead of night? Runefer could not picture it. As well picture a block of granite wafting like a feather, or a hippopotamus slithering like a cat. Rich men had guards about their courtyards, and light-dozing hounds, and servants who slept across the storeroom doors. Just one of Gebu's heavy footfalls, even at his stealthiest, they were audible. And the whole household would be shouting the alarm. Could he be stealing from some gold house, then? But there were guards at all gold houses, too. The palace? Ridiculous. Impossible. Where, then? Runefer asked himself, exasperated. Where does he go when he sneaks out like this? Where is he going this minute? The question resounded in Runefer's mind as he had spoken it aloud. Slowly his eyes turned toward the gate, barely visible in the shadows of the wall. If I followed him now, he thought, I could find out. For an instant he did not move, only stared toward the gate while visions of kefts and horrors paraded before his eyes. Then he rose slowly to his feet and stole toward the gate. There he paused again, trembling, before he reached out for the latch. The gate swung open. Another dreadful pause, and Runefer stepped out into the street. It looked utterly strange at this hour. The moon had set already, and the darkness was profound. Not a torch flickered anywhere, not a gleam of lamplight shone from any house. Straight above were the stars, but their brilliance served only to emphasize the blackness of Egypt here below. What faint light they shed fell gloomily upon some roof corner or a waving strand of vine, transforming familiar daytime shapes to eerily unfamiliar phantoms. Gebu was not in sight. I waited too long, Runefer thought. He could be streets away by this time, and I don't know which way he went. A voice inside him said, Coward, you're simply making excuses. But I promised the ancient I would never follow at night, Runefer told the voice. I gave my word. Coward, here is your chance at last, and you're afraid to take it. You're afraid. Yes, I'm afraid, Runefer thought desperately. But he could not endure the voice any longer. Tucking his head down as far as it would go between his hunched-up shoulders, he darted down the black street in the direction of the river. Whether it was the right direction or not, he had no idea. Gebu might have gone the opposite way or followed one of a dozen crooked alleys across the city toward Wenamun's house. Yes, would he not have done that? Runefer whirled and doubled back, casting a shrinking look over his shoulders as he did so. He saw nothing but blackness, heard nothing but the light staccato of his own frightened feet. I must say a charm, he thought as he peered through the darkness for the darker rectangle which would be an alley's entrance, turning his eyes every instant to this side and that for fear some unknown thing would pounce upon him if he did not keep watch. Avaunt, ye dead man, he whispered hastily, who comes in the darkness, who enters stealthily, with nose behind, face turned backwards. The whisper changed into an uncontrollable chattering of teeth as Runefer halted beside the narrow panel of blackness he was seeking. The alley was darker than the street, much darker and much more frightening, if that were possible. Gingerly he stepped into it. Avaunt, ye dead woman, who comes in the darkness, who enters stealthily, with nose behind, face turned backwards. The very words he was saying frightened him into a drenching sweat. they conjured up so clearly the horrors that might be creeping up behind him now, this minute, or lurking behind that object near the wall, whatever it was, or hovering just over his head with withered hands stretching out to seize him. Ronefer whirled in a panic to stare behind him and above him, at the same time stumbling back away from the unknown object near the wall. At that instant, three things happened. A blow behind his knees knocked his feet from under him and sent him sprawling. Something soft and bodiless rushed past him, even while sharp, claw-like fingers seized his shoulders in a dozen different places, and the night was rent by a wild and eerie screech. Ronefer tried to scream, but he could not, or else he screamed and could not hear it over the hideous reverberations of that other noise. He tore himself free of the clawing fingers, half fell, half flew himself out of the alley, and by the time the last shivering wail had died away, was tugging at his own gate. One last agonized glance backward as he flung it open showed him a lean, gliding shape on the top of a wall, silhouetted against the stars. Then the gate slammed behind him. He leaned against it, trembling all over and too weak to walk another step. After a while, he went shakily to his mat and dropped upon it. It took him some time to quiet his breathing, longer to stop trembling, and longer still to remember some fleeting familiarity about that gliding shape he had seen. For a while, his mind would not accept it. Then a cat called from somewhere down the street, a low and quavering, drawn-out wail. Ronefer's hair lifted in a cold tremor of recognition, which was followed by burning shame. Could it have been a cat, only a cat, from which he had fled as if it were a demon? No, impossible. Remember the blow behind the knees, the bodiless something rushing past him, the clawing fingers? His shoulders still stung from the scratches. When he put his hand to them, he could feel the little welts. He felt again, frowning. They felt remarkably like thorn scratches. And a cat, if he had stumbled back upon it and it had bounded away, might have hit him behind the knees as it escaped. Its fur, as it rushed past him, would have felt exactly like a bodiless something touching him. "Aye, what a coward you are," Ronefer told himself disgustedly. "You shied away from nothing, fell into a thorn bush and frightened a cat as badly as it frightened you. Now you'll never find Gebu. He could be anywhere by this time." Still, he could try. He went to the gate once more and opened it. The street was as black, as threatening, as enigmatic as before. There was no shape now upon that wall. Had it really been a cat? Kefts could take any shape they chose, any time they chose. Would a mere thorn bush have felt quite so much like clutching fingers? Ronefer stared into the darkness, shivering. Aye, perhaps it was a cat and a thorn bush, he thought. And perhaps it was not. In any case, Gebu was gone. He stepped back and closed the gate, making sure the latch caught securely. Just because there were cats in the world did not mean there were not Kefts also. One was as real as the other, and both were abroad at this hour. He did not care to encounter either again tonight. "Next time the hinges squeak, I will follow," Ronefer thought as he went back to his mat. "The very next time." There was no next time. For several nights he stayed awake as long as he could, but weariness always overtook him long before the hour at which the hinges might have squeaked. He changed his tactics and went to sleep early, hoping that by the hour he might be sleeping lightly enough to wake at any noise. Neither plan produced results. He suspected there was no noise to hear. "After all," he thought exasperatedly, "I cannot make the hinges squeak, even if I stay awake all night. It is simply that Gebu is not going out." He had mentioned nothing of his nocturnal fiasco to Hecate or the Ancient, and now he was glad, very glad. It was enough to endure his own humiliating knowledge that if he had started after Gebu sooner, or pursued him faster, or been braver,
all the mystery might have been unraveled now.
A fine spy I turned out to be, Ronefer told himself. I am as great a bumbler as I am a coward. The ancient was right. I would be better occupied in learning the stonecutter's trade as well as I can. It is at least a way to earn my bread when I am a man, and no doubt I shall never be a goldsmith.
Smothering the rage of protest that rose in him in spite of all reason, he set himself drearily to improving his skill at stonework, observing the methods of the craftsmen, trying to understand the running of the shop. When Pais sent him one morning to the scroll room and told him to set the shelves in order, he studied the drawings as he worked, noting the design for a further temple addition, comparing the plans for a royal shrine or two, and remarking the variations in several tombs. One of these latter drawings contained a detail he found in none of the others, either a truncated passage or a small room in a location which seemed either senseless or mistaken. He puzzled over it a while, forcing himself to think of possible explanations in spite of his usual boredom and utter lack of interest in what its purpose might be. None of the explanations fit, and he threw the scroll aside impatiently. A moment later, he picked it up. He was a stonecutter's apprentice, and, tedious though it might be, he had resolved to learn his trade. He carried the scroll into the shop and looked around for Pai. Instead, he saw Gebu just straightening from his inspection of the finisher's progress on a limestone slab.
Well, Gebu grunted. What do you want? Why are you standing there?
I want to ask a question of Pai about the scroll.
Ask it then, of me. I am the master here.
Wishing he had thrown the scroll in the Nile, Ronefer silently unrolled it and pointed to the little chamber.
This room, I do not understand its purpose.
Instead of an answer, he got a blow on the head that sent him sprawling on the gritty floor.
Impudent mongrel!
Gebu flung the words at him like stones.
Why should you understand it? You'll do what you're told here, and nothing more. Do you understand me?
He leaned down, snatched the scroll from Ronefer's hand, and thrust it into the folds of his sash. His face was contorted with rage. Ronefer had seldom seen him look more vicious. Dazed by the blow and the completely unexpected reaction he had provoked, Ronefer could only stare.
Up with you, Gebu snapped, digging the copper-sheathed toe of his sandal into the boy's ribs. Back to work, and keep your questions to yourself hereafter.
He strode off across the shop, and Ronefer escaped to the scroll room, consumed with resentment and bitterly resolved that he was through with trying to be of value in the shop. He finished the day in a silence as sullen as that of the other apprentice, Nebre, whose stony indifference to men and work alike he was beginning to understand very well indeed. In the late afternoon, Wenamun came into the shop and glided in his chilling, cat-like way toward the statue base Gebu was measuring. Watching the two from beneath sulkily lowered lids, Ronefer saw Gebu walk quickly to meet him and draw him aside. They conferred a moment, then the scroll was produced from Gebu's sash and transferred to Wenamun's.
Hateful thing, Ronefer thought as he stretched the red chalked string across a block of granite. I hope it brings both of them bad luck. I hope the roof of that imbecile little room falls in on them while they are building it. I hope it is a stupid mistake they have made in their stupid drawings, and that the owner of the tomb will have them lashed and refuse to pay, and discredit them in all the city of the dead, and that Pharaoh hears of it and sends them far away into the desert to labor in the gold mines. That should please Gebu, greedy thief that he is.
Unfortunately, all the ill wishes he could invent were not powerful enough to rid him of Gebu's stubborn presence here in Thebes. Ronefer forced the scroll and his own anger to the back of his mind. It only made him hotter on an already oppressive day. That evening, after work, he met Hecate in the thicket and told him about it.
I only asked a question, he finished sulkily, and I get a cuff that makes my ears ring all day. He won't even let me learn his craft, much less the one I want.
Perhaps there is something secret about that little room, something he did not want you to find out. Nay, how could there be? It was drawn there on the scroll. Anyone could see it.
But did you not say he gave the scroll to Wenamun later?
Aye, there is nothing unusual in that. I told you, they work together often. Let's not talk about it anymore. I am sick of the subject.
The subject was not closed, however. Later that evening, much later, for he had even less desire than usual to go home, and he dawdled about until almost nightfall. He opened the gate of the courtyard to find Gebu waiting for him, grim-jawed. Hoping it was only the coppers he wanted, Ronefer went directly to him and put them in his hand. He turned quickly toward the storeroom, but Gebu spun him around.
Now, I want an explanation of that question you asked today. I want no lies either. Make haste, speak.
I only asked the purpose of that little room. What harm is there in that?
One of Gebu's fists rose more swiftly than Ronefer could dodge and struck him a glancing blow across the mouth, which nevertheless felt as if it had loosened half his teeth.
I know what you asked. I want to know why you asked it.
Because I was trying to learn your hateful trade, Ronefer shouted. I was trying to grow skillful. I was trying to understand how tombs are made and shrines are built. Never fear, I am finished with that now. I intend to do what I am told, and not the smallest bit more.
He fell silent, trembling with anger and with fright at his own temerity. One did not shout at Gebu without paying for it somehow, now or later.
No matter, Ronefer thought. Let him beat me. It is worth it sometimes.
However, Gebu only stared at him fixedly, the one eye blinking. There was no possible way of telling what was going on behind the stony mask of his face. After several minutes that seemed a lifetime each, he turned away, walked to the gate, and went out. Ronefer's knees gave way from weariness and discouragement, and did not think at all for a while. After some time, he became conscious of a trickle of something on his chin. He touched it gingerly and drew his hand away, smeared with blood. His split lip was beginning to swell painfully. He got to his feet, walked to the storeroom, and tugged open the door, feeling the saliva pour into his mouth as the fragrance of grain and salted fish came out to meet him. Stepping into the gloom, he felt his way from shelf to shelf, encountering the curve of bowls, the rough edge of a basket, the cool, sweating sides of a big water jar. Dipping a mug full, he splashed water freely on his lip and chin before he drank. There were a few crumbs in the basket and an onion in one of the bowls, but Gebu had left nothing else, on purpose, Ronefer was certain. The onion was small, but he ate it, thankful for part of Hecate's lunch at noon, then poured the crumbs carefully into his palm and licked it clean. Far from satisfying him, the sketchy meal only whetted his appetite. Moreover, the onion had made his lips smart and burn. It was swelling rapidly and felt as big as a duck's egg. More water eased his throbbing lip, but not his hunger. He left the storeroom, banging the door behind him, and started for his sleeping mat under the tree. Halfway there, an audacious thought stopped him. Slowly, he turned toward the stairs. Gebu had frequently threatened to beat him insensible if he had ever set foot in that upper room. On the other hand, Ronefer was in the mood to ignore all threats and defy Gebu if he could. Moreover, he was ready to wager his one shenty that there was food hidden away up there, and Gebu was gone. Next instant, he was creeping toward the stairs. It was almost full dark, but the moon god Toth's heavenly bark, which revealed its high-prowed boat shape clearly these nights of its waning, was beginning to shed a gentle radiance over the littered pavement. Keeping well in the deep shadows next the wall, Ronefer hurried up the worn and slanting steps, his mind full of enticing images, honey cakes, a whole keg of dried fish, a handful of sweet, sticky dates. He reached the passage and moved to the closed door at its end. There he paused, breathing hard, his ears straining for any sound below. Then he tugged at the bolt.
It resisted. He tugged harder, bracing his shoulder against the door. At last it gave way with a jolt